Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there. Can you still recall the time we cried? Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here, you can travel realms uncharted, blur the line, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray, your hostess for the night, and if you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. For tonight's show, we have some carryovers from previous shows, and we also have our main topic, which is poetry inspired by the photography of Eve Arnold. Unfortunately, my regular co-host Rex isn't here with me. He's probably getting some much needed rest. I figure most likely I'll rest, you know, after I'm gone from this earth, because what is it they say? There is no rest for the wicked. So hopefully, though, I will have someone else calling in and joining me. But in the meantime, I do know that I have a guest caller, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him on. And welcome, Randy. Glad you could join us. Or, well, me. And by us, I mean me and my other personalities. So how's it going?
All right. How are you doing, Pam?
I am doing great. It was a busy day running errands, getting laundry done. You called into the first show. The usual stuff, everyday life routine, plus some amazing poetry. So, life is good.
I'm always amazed with you and with Jean. it seems to me like whenever I look on here, you guys are doing some kind of a show. You're on there. So I really don't know when you get much rest. So you guys stay pretty busy.
Poetry is our superpower. That's for sure. It gives us the energy, I think, you know. Plus that we find ways to catnap. That's what it is, you know.
Well, I'm glad you get some rest in there in between somehow.
Well, I appreciate that. And I always appreciate that you are inspired by the contests and for the shows. All right. Yep. Well, let's see here. And, all right, got to find what I'm looking for. There we go. All right. So, Randy, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to put your poem up and go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. The inspiration for this is prompt number one, but actually it could have been any one of the pictures because it actually speaks to photography done by the photographer altogether in general, just, catching people in real life unbeknownst to them. So the name of it is Snapshots. Life can be very interesting or completely mundane. Some people go with the flow, some against the grain. Most of the time, actions will go unnoticed, but occasionally, they mysteriously come into focus. As an industrious photographer simply happens by, camera always ready, like a lurking James Bond spy, casually taking pictures of unsuspecting individuals, each becoming immortalized, but without residuals. We being the beneficiaries of these clandestine pics, voyeurs, but not those creepy types, sneaky and sick. Getting our glimpse of humanity one photo at a time, a strange art form that's setting a different paradigm that allows us a snapshot of random people's lives in black and white, and stored in our mental archives. A trove of information, rather dark and eerily unique, of unaware subjects into whose lives we get a peek. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Randy. And I am really glad that you are inspired. And you were right when you said that, you know, it could have been to any one of the prompts. That is so true. Because it does capture, she captures people in a beautiful, raw, honest, and in-the-moment way. She was known for taking portraits of famous people such as Marilyn Monroe, but really the strength of her work comes in her snapshots of the everyday people. And of the social injustice at the time, and it makes me think of I looked up some of her quotes, and she had this quote that said, "If a photographer cares about the people before the lens and is compassionate, much is given. It is the photographer, not the camera, that is the instrument." And I think her photography speaks volumes on that. And I think your poem speaks volumes on what her photography captures. I really like the comparison of being the photographer to being the James Bond spies and the voyeurs that see all of humanity, both the beauty and the ugliness of it. As an industrious photographer simply happens by, camera always ready like a lurking James Bond spy, casually taking pictures of unsuspected individuals, each becoming immortalized, but without residuals. We, being the beneficiaries of the Kladenstein picks, voyeurs, but not those creepy types, sneaky and sick. And that is true. You know, we are voyeurs, but we're voyeurs, we hope anyways, that most of us are, of voyeurs with a good heart and good intention who really want to see, you know, the beauty and the ugliness in people and you know, get that peek into the human heart, into the human mind. Really just an amazing write and very well done. And I think that was actually the most written to photograph in the contest. But yeah, a lot of them did have a very similar thought to them. I actually purposely tried not to put up many of or any of her pictures of the well-known people because I didn't really, you know, I mean, I find Marilyn Monroe interesting. I didn't want her to be the focus of necessarily any rights. I did want it to be the everyday caught off guard people of that time period. And is there anything else that you'd like to say about your right, Randy?
Well, yeah, in general, I mean, I think I agree with you. You know, if there could have been beautiful photographs of Marilyn Monroe or any other well-known personality, and they would have been fine, but I think, like you, that these photographs of everyday people caught in everyday life in various situations is far more interesting. We know a ton about Marilyn Monroe. We've seen a lot of her pictures. So, you know, it becomes kind of a hum-ho kind of a deal. But seeing people captured in everyday life, in simple situations, not fancy, they're not posing for anything. They're just living out life and have just kind of, for lack of a better word, magically been caught in a moment in time. And it's fascinating to see it. In its simplicity, it's still wonderful. I thought all of the photographs, all the prompts that were offered, were interesting and probably all were worthy of a poem. I thought the first one just seemed to kind of fit the bill to cover the whole thing. And, you know, talking about the quote that she had, you know, cameras take the picture, obviously, but they're just a tool. And the tool is only as good as the craftsman that uses it. So the photographer who takes the pictures is the one who actually sees the beauty or the interest in the subject, and the camera just simply takes the picture. You know, hammers are tools until they're put to use by a master carpenter or craftsman. Nothing's built, and they're just a hammer. So, you know, the camera is nice, but the photographer is actually the driving force behind what we get to see and as an end result. So I thought it was all a wonderful idea, and I enjoyed writing the poem.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad, very glad you were inspired. And yes, that is definitely what I tried to bring out. Here's something interesting I was reading about her. Well, she actually, one of her famous photographs was in a picture of George Lincoln Rockwell, and he was a leader of the American Nazi Party. And when she raised the photograph raised the camera to photograph Rockwell and his men, he hissed at her, "I'll make a bar of soap out of you." And she responded with, "As long as it isn't a lampshade," and kept on photographing. So
that's pretty remarkable. Yeah, that's facing some real ugliness right there, and
oh yeah,
even with the possibility of danger right along with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is
and,
so true.
And it points out the fact, too, that, okay, she's taking a picture of this individual who is obviously a very foul, unsavory person, but it still becomes art. And it's,
it does,
like
absolutely.
You said, the good, the bad, the beautiful and the ugly, it all becomes art, and we all get to look at it and judge which it is by our, when we see it, you know, we look at it. And, you know, we might even look at a picture of that guy, and unless something is written down, we might not even know who he was. We'd only
absolutely.
Have the picture.
Yep, we have the picture, we have the name, we have that moment captured. It is recorded. And yeah, that is the job of the photographer, the artist, and even the poet to, you know, capture those moments and make sure they're recorded for all of history. So, absolutely.
Yep, I'm sure that you, like myself and probably every other poet on all poetry, when we sit down to write a poem, we're hoping that it will touch someone else, whoever reads it, which we're hoping it will touch them somehow, in some way, and be moving, interesting, or informative, or just maybe just a lovely thought that someone gets to, we get to share with someone. I know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
When I'm writing poems, that's I'm trying to write something that I hope will move someone else in some way.
Yep. Well, you know, and I always want a reaction from people, and depending on the poem I'm writing, like sometimes I want the reaction for people to sigh and say, you know, that is the most beautiful and romantic thought. But other times I like to write the kind of poetry that makes them kind of sit up straight in their chair and go, really? Is it really that ugly? Is it really that brutal? You know, I have to relook at this. I have to, you know, I want them to think about society oftentimes, you know. But, yeah, definitely any sort of reaction, you know. Other than this is the worst poem I've ever read in my life.
Yes. But, we don't want that, but I've had a few bad responses to poems, so it's part of the deal.
It is for sure. No doubt about that. Yep. All right, well, now I'm going to switch over to carryovers, and I have sent out some messages, so, you know, hopefully somebody will be responding, and I've put up Art Erotic Affair by Jody Melton, and it goes like this. In the allure of creation where passions run free, colors embrace in a dance, oh so sweet, a canvas awaits, naked and pure, in a playground for souls where desires endure. Art, the most passionate orgy in a man's embrace, where hearts and minds entangle without a trace, with each brushstroke and press of the pen, ecstasy blooms time and again. In hues and shades of love and despair, artists indulge in emotions laid bare, a symphony of senses where fantasies meet, in the sacred chambers where souls entreat. The sculptor's hands caress the stone, molding it into flesh and bone. As clay takes shape, a lover's form, passion ignites storm. Within the stage spotlights kiss the actor's soul, marinates in bliss every role, a new embrace, a dance of characters face to face. Music, the ultimate seductress, plays with hearts, a temptress, in melodies, souls come undone. In rhythm's arms, they become one. Writers weave tales of love and lust with ink as their passion, a fervent thrust. Words collide like bodies entwined in the orgasm of thoughts, hearts find. Through every art, a connection's thread, a sensual dance, souls widespread. In creativity's arms, we gasp the most passionate orgy in eternal grasp. So let us revel in this prevalent spree in art's embrace forever free. For in creation's arms, we clasp the most passionate orgy, a love that will last. End poem. And Jody wrote to, art is the most impassionate orgy within a man's grasp, by John Donne. And your thoughts on this poem, Randy?
I liked this all the way through. It flowed very well, and it covered a lot of art forms, most of the art forms, very well, thoroughly, and great detail. I, for some reason or the second stanza, I think caught me the best. Art, the most passionate orgy in a man's embrace, where hearts and minds entangle without a trace. With each breaststroke and press of the pen, ecstasy blooms time and again. It really speaks very well to what we've just been talking about before. In total, how the photographer or the writer or whatever, what they put into their art form, the passion they put into it, and the result of it, whether they're writing something or they're sculpting something or painting something. I think this poem speaks to that so beautifully, very well written. And I enjoyed it from beginning to end.
Absolutely. You know, I have to agree. This poem is a beautiful response to the quote, speak on what we were talking about, that idea of, you know, the message put out by the artist. I really liked this all the way through, but I think for me it was the part about the sculpture and the music that really spoke to me. The sculpture, because part where it says the sculptor's hands caress the stone, molding into flesh and bone. It makes me think of, I remember reading about, I'm blanking on a simple name. Who was it that did the statue of David? What was his name? The Renaissance
Da Vinci?
Man? Yes.
Da Vinci?
Yes, it was. I believe it was Da Vinci anyways. Yeah, I think so. But anyways, that piece of stone that the statue of David was carved from, he spent years just examining it and letting that stone speak to him. And I also, of course, love the music part, because music to me is one of the most beautiful art forms. You know, I wish I had musical talent myself, but I have a great appreciation for it. And I think music is how we find our own individuality. Music, the ultimate seductress, plays with hearts, a temptress in melodies. Souls come undone in rhythm's arms. They become one. It truly is a wonderful rite on the personal connection to both to the soul, body, and mind that art creates. So... Absolutely, very well done.
I agree with you on the music part too, especially. You know, it's been called the universal language. You can listen to music no matter where you are in the world, and it doesn't matter what kind of music it is. I mean, you can enjoy it. Obviously, we don't necessarily have to like every kind of music there is. I don't like everything, but I appreciate good music, and especially if it's soothing or rhythmic or something like that. And that can be from any part of the world at all. And music is a very common thing. I like music myself. I'm not particularly gifted at music. I punk around on the guitar a little bit, but I'm not a great guitar player by any stretch. But I like it because, as a poet, I like the poetry in music, in the lyrics of song. And that always speaks to me. And, you know, in talking about the sculptor, I don't remember who the quote was attributed to, but some sculptor said, you know, the statue is inside the stone. It's just my job to remove the rest of it that surrounds the form. So, yeah, very, very well done.
Yeah, I like that thought there, and I remember that quote from somewhere. But yeah, you're right that you know, you just have to let, even an empty canvas, you know, I think you have to let it speak to you, or even to taking a photograph in the moment, you know, well, even a poem. I mean, very few of us like rush into writing a poem. You know, we might have an initial first line that we rush into, but after mm-hmm. that, I think we, you know, we kind of carve out the poem and see
yep.
what feels right. So, absolutely.
Yeah, it takes you where it wants to go.
Yep, it sure does. It sure does. Yeah, I was very fortunate to grow up with a grandmother, my mother's side, who was an artist. She went to college to study art. We always had a lot of different kinds of art and sculptures in her house. And so that was definitely something I found inspiration in. But,
yeah.
All right.
I painted a lot when I was younger. As I've gotten older, I don't see as well, and my hands aren't as steady, so I haven't done any painting. I used to do watercolor and some sketches and stuff like that, and I just generally, I sold a few of them, but mostly I gave them away to people that liked them, so I just did it.
You know what, I think that's a wonderful thing. You know, I think whenever possible, you know, art should be shared. And, yeah, absolutely. Did you do, like, a lot of nature scenes and? Or?
Yeah, I did, a lot of nature scenes, a lot of landscapes, countryside pictures and stuff like that. Maybe an old barn and a field and some trees and a dirt road, that sort of thing. And I was never good actually doing people. Could never handle. I'm so envious of people that that artists that can paint people's faces like portraits and stuff that make it look like it's a photograph, not a painting. It just boggles my mind.
Well, yeah, I mean even something like the hands, like, you know, that famous painting of the praying hands. I mean,
mm-hmm.
like the detail put into making those hands, like every line, every vein, even the curve of the fingers, you know, I mean, I definitely am envious of people with talent like that.
I don't think I could have ever stood the pressure of having to do that for a living, where, you know, someone's maybe demanding I paint a certain thing or something. One time I painted a picture of a horse, just the horse's head, and a young girl in church where we're going to church saw it and liked it, so I gave it to her. And the next week her parents came up and said, could you do another one? Her sister liked it so well, she'd like to have one too. And I was kind of stuck on it, between a rock and a hard place. So I said, yeah, but man, doing the second one was much harder.
Because you had the pressure of knowing, you know, that you were doing it specifically for somebody.
Yeah.
So
the first one just came naturally.
Yep. Exactly. But no, I never had, again, just like music, art, well, I've always had very unsteady hand-eye coordination. Most of that because of, you know, having grand mal seizures since I was 7 and being on various different medications, you know, I'm, you know, I mean, even, you know, from a young age, you know, because of obvious, you know, reasons, I've just not coordinated. So poetry has always been my outlet, my artistic way of painting. My sister is artistic. I have, you know, aunts and grandmothers and, you know, even my mom in her own way. My mom played, oh my goodness, she could play Beethoven on the piano and other classic musicians. I mean, you know, it was just,
that's wonderful.
You know, it is. It was just good memories of sitting next to her on the piano. So, yeah. Yep, I appreciate those good memories. But, yep, art is not my thing. But you know what? Thank goodness I have some way to express the thoughts that come into this head. So,
and we, you know. And we all appreciate that, too.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and put up another poem. And it's One Never Knows by Sidewinder. And Randy, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yeah, I'm going to have to refresh real quick here because I see it. Okay. One Never Knows by Sidewinder. Mortal eyes touching in destiny. I'm reading this and wondering how and why. Yet I see that appeasement through simple actions, finding ways to help common people, reaching out of kindness to thy neighbor, sometimes needs that need. A simple walk is all one needs. A smile, a smiling face, maybe an ear to simply listen. One never knows what is going on or what one sees. Yet, if one takes the time, little things matter within a life scene of rings and poem.
Great read, Randy. And I was glad to see that Sidewinder was inspired by this contest. I really appreciate his support and, you know, and I don't actually, like, I know what contest this was written for. It was written for last week's The Metaphysical Poet, but I'm not 100% sure of the prompt he wrote to. However, I did appreciate the message in this poem. I really like particularly finding ways to help common people, reaching out of kindness for thy neighbor. Sometimes need that need. A simple walk is all one needs. A smiling face, maybe an ear to simply listen. One never knows what is going on or what one sees. And I like that because it makes me think of that quote that says something along the lines of be kind because you never know what battle someone is facing. You know, and that is so true. People, they deal with depression, they deal with anxiety, they deal with stuff going on in their lives that we don't even know about. And, you know, sometimes it's that encouraging word, that smiling face, you know, that can really make a difference, you know, and even if it doesn't make a difference to that person. Even if your kindness, you know, in reaching out to somebody goes unnoticed or unappreciated, perhaps at least you know that you've done the right thing. So I definitely felt like this was a heartfelt write by Sidewinder and very well done. And Randy, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I feel exactly the same as you do. I mean, it's a wonderful write about kindness and the simple fact that it costs nothing to be kind, and it may be worth a fortune to someone else to receive kindness. Like you said, we don't know what other people are going through necessarily. We interweave with other people in daily life, strangers in and out, acquaintances, people at work, or whatever the case might be. And we rarely know all the details of their life. And so often, all they need is an encouraging word, a pat on the back, a smile, or something to keep them going or brighten their day a little bit. And, I fully agree 100%. I think everyone, I try to do this, I don't always succeed, but everyone should always try to be kind and helpful to others, expecting nothing in return, for no reason at all, just for the simple fact of doing a good deed and being kind to someone else. And I believe that you will get a reward for that at some point.
Absolutely.
You should just do a good deed for the simple fact of doing it and not for a reward per se. But yeah, this is a really good poem, and this poem speaks to all of that very well. Very well written and touching poem. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And yeah, what you were saying made me think of that. You know, earlier today I was reading some of the Prophet by Khalil Gibran, and it has a section that speaks on doing good deeds, and how it says, as you were saying, that good deeds should be done without expectation of reward or even expectation of praise. So, great comment.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see here. Up next, we have Of Man and Destiny by Blue Right 76. And it goes like this. Few walks and picnics took at a lonely beach never let us know that the same shore will invite us someday to find a home. Man's mortal eye and his mind's own within is closed too much that lays a ground in wait, and to a greater extent within every mind and weight. Answers dance on the board, yet the invisible ink shields the unsought or protects the undestined, or what great sages call curtained from the eye. Woke up one morning years after to understand how I misjudged many a friend, or the realization of a mistake comes too late in the day of life. Treasures of life sought us unbidden, sometimes like the discovery of Indiana's chalice at your own garden, hidden from a populated mind. Yearnings sail past, storms that fail or rot, brought more worthy gifts to wipe away regret, touted the destiny's game. Evolution is the world's nature, change the magical one, and again it is the curse, the cause, and the deliverer too. Destiny is always steps ahead. It's a blind man's buff we can't play with, only the next step to look on. When people put in a clause to not sail the storm, most of us dare to plunge ahead. Yet what pulls the reins, the man or the destiny, as we navigate all weather, will be a debate for eons to come. Cause man's vagaries are as wild as destiny's crazy turns he is forced to digest. End poem. And Blue Right 76 was inspired by Locked Up from the Mortal Eye in the Shady Leaves of Destiny by Richard Cramshaw. And your thoughts, Randy?
Yeah, this is overall, as you go from one stanza to the next, it basically is speaking to how much we don't know. How we don't know what the future entails. There are many hidden things in our life, like man's mortal eye and his mind's own within is closed to much that lays around in wait, and to a greater extent, but even his mind in wait, answers dance on the board like the invisible ink shields the unsought or protects the undestined, or what great sages call curtain from the eye. You know, there are many things in life that that we miss, that we don't understand, things that are just beyond our comprehension at times. And that's the fascination of that, that keeps us going. And destiny is always steps ahead. It's a blind man's buck we play with only the next step to look on. So we're kind of at times, in some ways, blindly walking through life. We may think that we know what's going on, we're in charge, and like that. But this poem speaks to the fact that so much of our future and those things around us are beyond our understanding or our grasp. And, you know, brings it down to, because man's vagaries are as wild as destiny's crazy turns, he is forced to digest. We have to digest our life and everything that goes into it, but that doesn't mean that we fully understand it all, that we even grasp all of it. So, yeah, I thought it was fascinating. Right?
It is fascinating, and I like what you have to say about how there's always going to be those things that we don't understand, we don't grasp, but we try to reach for understanding. I thought it was particularly fascinating in this poem how she wrote on the idea of you know, like fate versus free will, you know, the idea of how much say do we have in our own destiny. And the how different decisions, you know, affect the twist and turns. I really like yearning sail past storms that failure wrought, brought more worthy gifts to wipe away regrets, touted the destiny's game. You know, sometimes we have to go through the failures in order to see the rewards, you know, of the journey that we are taking. So just a brilliant write and very well done. And I'd like to welcome Faziana to the show. Welcome, Fazy. Glad you could be
Hi,
here.
Pam.
How's it going?
Pretty good. Packing for a trip. I just caught the tail end of that poem, but I was reading as you were commenting. And I really liked the stanza, the invisible ink shields the unsought or protects the undestined, especially shields the unsought, where if it's not, you know, thrown in your face, and people don't see a lot of important things, it's only if you seek it out. So that invisible ink, in terms of, you know, the subtleties of life are missed by many people. You need to be seeking it to gain that wisdom. I found that a really interesting way of putting it.
Absolutely. I have to agree. And, yeah, sometimes you just have to step back to get a clearer view of the problem and find the answer. So, great observations there, Fazy. All right. And, Randy, I know you don't usually stay up too late, so, you know, you're always welcome to stay as much as you want, but I'll also understand if you have to go. I appreciate you hanging out longer than usual.
Yeah, that's no problem. I'll stay for another poem.
All right. Sounds good. So let me go ahead and grab that, and I'm gonna put up Making Sense by Lockdown Larks. And Randy, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Not Making Sense. You're not making sense. Earth was created in 6 days. No, billions of years to condense the oceans and waterways. Oh no, that is totally wrong. The rains came to fall and Noah sang his song, nothing to do with Earth's fall. Look, you totally failed to see after Earth, man was created, that there were humanoids aplenty. Why was Homo sapiens so fed or fitted? Well, because of eternity. We all want to go on. Eternity through eternity. Have you heard of a neutron? Billions of stars and a sky view. A universe expansion immersed. And there is a devil, too. Now you're really not making sense. In poem.
I feel like you're muted, Pam.
Am on mute. Oh, my goodness. Thank you. Thank you, Faisy. And a great read there, Randy, and a wonderful write by Lockdown Larks, who was inspired by the quote, "Life is an incurable disease" by Abraham Cowley. And Faisy, your thoughts?
I like some of the vocabulary here, why was Homo sapiens so fetid? Fetid is not a word you hear very often. And then it's kind of interesting that it has the back and forth. It's that, you know, science versus religion kind of showdown going on. It's interesting that it has that debate within itself. Cool.
I like that observation, how you, science versus religion showdown. Like, I can see them in that old dusty Western town getting ready to draw their pistols. Oh, very cool. Great comment. And Randy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Faisy on it. I mean, it has the science versus religion aspect to it. Excuse me. And not particularly well-defined. It remained rather vague. It's not really necessarily, the poem isn't really necessarily giving us an explicit answer to the question, but just throws it out there. And let's us chew on the observations of whether it's creation by God or by chance. So I found it to be an interesting poem, and it gives us something to think about, that's for sure.
It does, and I like that you brought up that it doesn't particularly give an answer. It doesn't necessarily take a side. It's offered up, this conversation is back and forth, is offered up as like almost an opportunity, given the opportunity for the reader to think and come to their own conclusion. And I did think this was clever in its presentation. Look, you totally failed to see after Earth man was created, but there were hominids aplenty. Why was Homo sapiens so fetid? Well, because of eternity, we all want to go on, fraternity through paternity. Have you heard of a neutron? I mean, it really was just very clever in its presentation and excellent write. All right.
I think I'm gonna head out, Pam. I wanted to hang around a little bit extra tonight because you were shorthanded, so I just wanted to stick with you. So. Glad I had the opportunity to do that. And good night to you and Faisiana.
Good night, and thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, Faisy. Up next, we have Old Fella's Nap by Peter Solway. And go ahead, please, and give that a read.
All right, Old Fella's Nap by Peter Solway. Surrender to kamikaze Japs. So long, mom and pop. War effort, doomed art, supported. Emperor obeyed, best fella as always. Bart comical Simpson. Desert of famished camels. Character of no return. Fierce flies to suicide bomb. Iris suck. Emperor, please. Gardens of Kaura, such coward's pleasure. Promisades, promise of rich America. Fact of Darwin bombed. Not taught on evil television. Land of lax, wanking, winter dripping. Caves now called Janolan, limestone, still dripping. End poem.
Great, great read there, Faisy. Wow, I tell you, doesn't Peter Solway just always give us this food for thought? And I swear to goodness, sometimes I can't describe the taste of that food. But I was looking up the word Kaura because, of course, that fascinated me. And it was actually the Kaura breakout occurred on August 5th, 1944, when 1,104 Japanese prisoners of war attempted to escape from a prison of war camp near Kaura in New South Wales, Australia. It was the largest prison escape of World War II, as well as one of the bloodiest during the escape and ensuing manhunt. Four Australian soldiers and 231 Japanese soldiers were killed or committed suicide. And so that was fascinating to learn something new. Peter always takes a different direction, because this was actually a carryover from my last Twisted Tuesdays contest, where I had quotes about daydreaming, or I told people that they can write on the topic of daydreaming. And I have to say that, like a lot of Peter's poetry, while I greatly appreciate his wordplay and his use of unique imagery and metaphors, I had a hard time grasping the idea of daydreaming as I perceive it in this poem. However, I did, you know, start to put thought into it, because I did have a quote. Both the quotes about the positive and negative aspects of daydreams, you know, and I think perhaps, you know, and I could be wrong, but maybe there's this idea that even the evil, ridiculous, all people of the world, like all kinds of people have daydreams, you know, and maybe, it's speaking on how foolish our own daydreams are when there are people trying to escape persecution. In a fascinating right all the way through. And I did a particular, like, Emperor, please, which made me think of the story of the Emperor's New Clothes, Gardens of Kaura, such coward's pleasure, promises of rich America. I see that almost as the idea of the emperor, the nation, the rich nation getting rich off of the blood of the past. A wonderful write and very well done. And Faisy, what kind of thoughts did this bring to your mind?
Well, it's trippy. quite the,
yeah.
The daydream to have. I have daymares, which is sort of like, you know, if you think of like nightmares, and most people have it when they're sleeping, but occasionally, because I'm a little bit crazy, when I'm trying to have a daydream of happy thoughts, it goes down some weird path and ends up being scary. I feel like Peter shares this quality with me, where, you know,
right.
His his daydreams become daymares. But also, I know that he's very creative and interested in history. So to think about the kamikaze and the war, and I didn't know about Kaura, so definitely a history lesson just in what you said right there. There are a couple of points where there's spelling mistakes, and I know that that's got to be on purpose because Peter is, like, impeccable in his writing. He breaks the rules on purpose, but I've never seen him make mistakes. So I feel like there's reason for that, and I'm not quite sure. But Doomed Art Supported has an extra O in there, Suo-ported, which makes me think of, like, sumo wrestlers for some reason. So I feel like he's doing some kind of Japanese reference that is not actually sumo, it's suo. But I kind of wonder if that's sort of a Japanese-sounding word. I could be totally wrong because I don't speak Japanese. But there's something about the way that he did that that I think it's wordplay. And then later on, he says, where does he spell it wrong? Instead of promises of rich America, it's promises of rich America. There's a D in there where there shouldn't be. And maybe he's trying to create, like, an accent with his spelling. I'm not quite sure. But I know with Peter, I would expect it to be intentional when something has extra letters like he has there. So I'm taking it as clues. I don't understand the clues, but I feel like he's given us some breadcrumbs there.
Okay. And I think you're right. I'm looking up Suo, and it says Suo, S-U-O, can have different meanings depending on the context. It is a Latin phrase that means in his or her own right and used to indicate that a noblewoman holds a title independently of her husband. It is a Finnish word that means swamp or bog, and it is also an acronym for senior under officer, a rank in the British military. I would think for some reason that the acronym would be actually more fitting with the tone of Peter's poem, but I'm glad you brought that up because you're right. He is impeccable when it comes to spelling, and any spelling error or so perceived spelling error is definitely wordplay. So very cool there.
Yeah, he's a lot like my pal Pupil. So there's a lot of people who, if they make a mistake, I give them heck for it. But when people misspell something, I know that there's something that I'm not understanding.
Yes. And you learn to know the difference between people. And plus it kind of like depends on the word too, sometimes, we all know those words that, like spell check automatically changes things too, Yeah, I'm one of those. If you see a spelling mistake, please just point it out to me in private message because, It was either a spelling mistake or...
But, I got you.
Awesome. I always appreciate that. All right. Let's see what we have next. All right, grabbing the next one, and we have Vanishing Point by Anton Ansford, 37, and it goes like this. Dreams never end for the white people who had packed up their wagons and headed west. Gold and silver were replaced by fame and notoriety. Similarly, the modest house in the suburbs was modified into a subprime McMansion. However, the United States was built not just on such tawdry ambitions, but dreams of a gentle, kinder society from Thoreau to the beatniks, punks, and hippies, a hardcore of rebellion against the vapidness of the materialistic mainstream, end poem. And this was a carryover from a contest I ran last week for it was an 8 spots only contest, and there was simply one quote to be inspired by, and that quote was, "Inside every cynical person is a disappointed idealist," by George Carlin. And Faisy, your thoughts on Anton's right?
I think it's really interesting, and it's kind of taking like a twist on the American dream, because that was, you know, head to the new place, create a family, and, you know, make money and be able to start from scratch and get lots going. And it was very financially motivated, really. It's like, you know, you're going to have a house and you're going to have all these things. And it's just part of the idea that was kind of pictured in, like, the, say, like the 50s, 60s, 70s. And the suburbs were like a goal. It's like, I'm going to have here my white picket fence and all that kind of life. And then that sort of changed, where it went two directions. There are the people who are going for, like it says, the McMansion, I don't know how to describe it, but this goes McMansion. And then the opposite, where it's like the people going against the materialistic mainstream, and it lists all, like, some good examples of that, the punks and the hippies and the rebellion, and it's all going against the kind of empty feeling of the goal of having that, you know, nuclear family, perfect little, I'm brain dead, sorry. It's a different twist on it. So I thought it was interesting, and probably a great response to, it's George Carlin, right?
It was, yes. Yes.
Yeah. I know Dex really loves him. Pardon?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. George Carlin is great. He's got so many awesome quotes. One of the great things about him, well, his humor does get political. And like I've said before, you know, I don't always agree with everything he says, but he does tend to not really take sides, but rather make observations with his humor. So, yep, definitely good stuff. But, yeah, I like the observation you made about how the changes that happened in the American dream. And that's what I caught in this, too. I really thought it had amazing imagery and metaphors. It was an excellent write on how throughout history, dreams have changed from the need for the physical, for the desire for the spiritual, and the desire to expand the mind. I wasn't 100%. The one thing I wasn't really 100% sure of was if it was supposed to be into a subprime McMansion or into a subprime MC mansion, because I had two different thoughts. One was obviously of the McRib, the McDonald's in general, and, you know, the idea of sensationalism and, you know, advertisement and, the quick and easy, you know, food for the masses. But then I have to admit, I also thought of, I think it was back in the 90s. Do you remember MTV Cribs, where most of the time they'd have, like, you know, like houses of like rich, famous rappers, and you mm-hmm. they take tours? Yeah, it made me also think of that. I thought, well, maybe it's supposed to be a reference to like you know, these MCs, these, you know, rappers and their rich mansions. But I really like how he brings up Thoreau and the beatniks and punks and hippies, and how this became that rebellion, you know, against that, that, as he says, materialistic mainstream, how that voice was heard through those who were considered rebels. So excellent write and very well done.
So I'm pretty sure it's McMansion, because I've heard that before, and so I Googled it, and it says, a large modern house that is considered ostentatious and lacking in architectural integrity.
Okay, cool. I'm glad you, I'm, you know, it is interesting when a poem can give you different thoughts, but it's also really great, I think, when you can find the answer. So I'm glad you Googled that. Very cool. All right. Now, Faizy, this is where you earn your Christmas bonus. So you go ahead and you read Whatchamacallit What by Luke J.R., and I'll make sure that Jean puts some extra in your Christmas bonus this year.
Why, thank you. I don't think I've ever gotten a bonus before.
Yeah, I don't think any of us have.
Whatchamacallit What by Luke Jr. Whatchamacallit What? Error. It's Astronaut X. Exhaust. Zyro. Oh. Pastoletic. Pasture. Pacific prequel. Slow motion staring towards starvation. Astronaut X has reached their destination. Purple shadows reaching for the pastel skies. Orangey, fiery hues misting mist mist. Dismissed, Astronaut X returns to the lies. Pastelic, pasture, Pacific sequel. Oh, visions haunt the nightmarish sky. Beauty within every unknown entity. Purplish, shadowy structures, unseen. Astronaut X is fighting chlorine. Where those are bathed, unseen. Astronaut X is dismissed. Oh. Daunting departure, defying depths, slow motion, staring towards salvation. Astronaut is empty. Astronaut is entity. We've reached the final destination. Through all planes of this universe, universes within universes. X, X, O, end poem.
Great read there, Faizy. And that was definitely not an easy one. I do really like how Luke always plays with words and phrasing, both orally, you know, with from the ears and visually. But he does it especially well in this one, as he brings us into this science fiction vibe of a poem. And with all the X's and the O's, it has a very mathematical feel to it. You know, it's almost like he's mixed poetry and what's that math that we all hate that we never use? Well, besides all math.
Algebra.
Algebra, yes. Yes, that's it. Yes, he's mixed poetry and algebra to create this unique painting that you know swirls and draws the mind in. I really like visions haunt the nightmarish sky, beauty within every unknown entity, purplish shadowy structures unseen. Astronaut X is fighting chlorine, where those are bathed unseen. Astronaut X is dismissed. Daunting departure, defying depths. Slow motion staring towards salvation. Astronaut is empty. Astronaut is entity. This makes me think of, and I haven't watched it for a while, but like the Star Wars shows, like the original, not Star Wars, sorry, Star Trek, my bad. I knew what I was thinking. It just came out wrong. The Star Trek shows where the whole idea was to explore new worlds without interfering with them. And I feel like astronaut is empty. It is the idea of the astronaut taking everything in and just observing. And then astronaut is entity becomes the idea of that astronaut, that space explorer, transitioning to a godlike power or a godlike reflection of themselves. He says, you know, within his AN, X exists within planes of our own existence. Further out throughout the destiny of astronauts, X exists within planes of our own existence. So that's interesting because I think almost like it speaks on the ideas, as I read his AN, that the point of our existence can change, almost seems like it's almost of an afterlife or a potential afterlife. It definitely is thought-provoking. I do think, if I remember right, this was written for the Daydream show, but I don't know for sure. I just remember, and I feel bad, I should have made a note to myself, he missed the contest, wrote it for one of the shows, but I don't remember which one, and I can't tell from the AN, but definitely a fascinating write. And Faisy, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, I like your Star Trek reference because that the prime directive of like not messing with any of the societies that you're exploring. I could definitely see that be connected here with those are bathed unseen and fighting the chlorine. So he has to be cleaned off and unseen and not interfere. I could see how that would be connected to that. And then astronaut is empty. It could be, you know, trying to be your blank slate that can take things in. It could also be empty as in sad and, all alone out there in space, not able to get where you're going. If it's a really long trip, which usually in space it would be, you could be a lifetime older by the time you get anywhere, and you're in isolation. So that emptiness of internal emptiness is a thing, but also empty because space can feel really empty. I mean, there's a lot of space in between things. So to look at like the vastness of darkness out there could be an overwhelming empty. And then I really like how it switches from empty to entity, which those words are very similar looking, and especially the way that they're all capsed right there. At first, I was thinking at a glance that it was repeating a word, but it's not. And I thought that was a clever move there. I like how he writes things too, like error. It's written capital E, lowercase r, capital R, lowercase o, capital R, error. And that made it, in my mind, sound a little bit like a robot, error.
Yes.
So I just... I thought of it as like a droid talking. Now that could just be my own strangeness, but I do like sci-fi things, and I just for some reason made that connection that it was like the robot or the ship saying like there's a problem, error. It's not reading the astronaut. The astronaut is not fitting in the logic that this wants it to.
Yes, it's like that old show where error, Will Robinson, error.
Yeah, and danger.
Yeah, oh, danger, sorry, danger. But, oops, my bad. All right, but yeah. But I made the same connection with the idea that that would be said in a robotic voice. So I did like how you read that and your interpretation of that. I also liked how, and I hadn't thought about that, but that you brought up that emptiness is a representation of perhaps the sadness within, the loneliness, or perhaps even the vastness of space itself. So very cool there. All right. And our last carryover, and then we'll go into our main contest, is Syndromes of Pandemic Casualties by Liquid Mind Forever. Are we not but units of self-contained energy, my dear? Do we not smell and hear or taste and touch ourselves in trance? Is it not maddening not to be able to lose ourselves from fear? No matter the years we spend, the energy we expend, seldom advanced, we long, we yearn, we try to discern. But what do we learn? We pray for love, then evade, offer a tirade or obeyed. We adore our time alone, often avoid the phone, turn away, hope, we play. Another day, topsy-turvy, splayed. We lie in wait, dissipate, agitate, miscreate fate. Appropriates, we excuse the ruse as we love to hate. Relegate our latest state as we diss and confiscate. Reprobates who come before our magistrate, we castrate. Alone in wist-light of fancy, we chew the bone of contention. Kings and queens, we masquerade, we practice masturbation, none disturbed with intervention, nor convention or suspension of thought. We're caught in fantasies of ecstasy's predilection. Adore us and we'll love you, rile us and we'll kill you off. Laugh at us, ignore us, argue with us, but don't dare cough. End poem. And Liquid Mind Forever was inspired by the quote, I dream a lot. I can sit in complete silence for hours and be perfectly happy, lost in my own thoughts. And Faisie, your thoughts on this poem?
I can think it kind of explores how different people took the pandemic differently in terms of how they handled isolation. For some people, it was awful to have to be isolated. And for others, it was like, oh, I have time to daydream to myself, to not be interrupted, and I just have the quiet ability to think. There are those different kind of reactions. I'm kind of the weird loner that I was all right with it, at least for a while. And I like the rhyme scheme that she has. She definitely gets some good rhymes in there. And not your typical words that are just like one syllable, like suspension, predilection, contention. She has some excellent word choices for her rhymes. And she doesn't hold back. I mean, we castrate. She gets right in there. The end, but don't dare cough, is, a thing. Because I myself was very afraid of being around people who were sick. There's, like, this idea of, like, we can be angry, you can make fun of us, but... You know, that's the deal breaker. If you cough, then I'm out of the fight. It's just nope, straight gone. you can slap me and that's okay, but you cough and no, I'm gone. I thought this was really well done.
Absolutely. I do have to agree. And I like what you have to say about, because I do agree that us introverts really handled the pandemic, at least for a while, much better than extroverts. It was like we were living in our moment. And I like what you had to say about the cough. I see this also to be in another way. Like I agree with what you said, we did have, that fear of, just stay back, which was understandable, don't cough. But for somebody like me who is always coughing because I have such bad allergies, for example, I honestly, as much as I feared other people coughing, I feared also the glares, the looks, the what people would have to say. When I knew I had no symptoms of COVID, it was just simply the same cough I've always had. But I do think this is just a wonderful and intriguing rite. Great rhyme and flow, you know, especially great wordplay in the inner and end rhyme. And I like that she takes a look at the understanding of the human psyche. And, you know, she really, as you said, she doesn't hold back. You know, we lie in wait, dissipate, agitate, miscreate fate, appropriate, we excuse the ruse, we love to hate. And then those end lines, adore us and we'll love you, rile us and we'll kill you off, laugh at us, ignore us, argue with us. You know, and there's a biting humor to that end line. But I also, you know, I think this poem in general takes a look at the difference between people who stay in their daydreams and those who rise from their daydreams to speak with a voice that won't put up with any shit. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And I see Mamya on the board, just tuning in. So hello, Mamya. Good to see you. Thank you for hanging out on the board. Very cool. All right. Now the question is did I grab the next poem? Nope, that's right. I had put up the show link. So let me go ahead. And now we're actually getting into the rites of our main topic, which is a contest I ran with some of the photography of Eve Arnold. So I definitely recommend checking her out. Just brilliant photographer. We have Different Sides, Different Lives by Yorkie Buff. And go ahead, please, Faisy, and give that a read.
Different Sides, Different Lives by Yorkie Buff. They sit overdressed for old master viewing. Her fur coat antagonistic in its dulled sheen. Argyle support stockings stretched over veins, perched on a captain's chair, legs taking strain, rubber-tipped elm cane supporting her weight. She looks like one of New York's finest. His shoes reflect mirror bright light beneath the horsehair leather sofa. He thinks deeply in isolation. Thin hair cropped close, unaware of neglecting his wife, in the hushed reverence of the gallery. He is a contemplative island while she searches the room for congeniality. Portraits stare out of gilded, embossed frames, curious eyes taking in alien worlds of these 19th century gazes that wonder, guessing what artist meant in this tuck of the chin or moo of the mouth, the slant of an eye to the side, answers painted on stippled canvas. End poem.
Great read, Faisy. And I was telling Randy earlier that this was the most written to a photograph. And it is intriguing because you have this couple. And to be honest, you know, you think, well, they could be a couple, they could be married, but maybe they're just complete strangers who happen to both sit down. And I really like the imagery and the word choices that Yorkie Buff has used. And then to give these two people their individual personalities, and not only their personalities, but, you know, showing what's important to them. And I really feel like that she's done a great job of capturing that. Like you see the contemplative look of the man, and it looks as if he is studying the art that's hanging on the wall. But, and the woman, I mean, she could be also studying art, but she has that kind of look as if, almost as if she's judging, you know, a person or, you know, looking at the way somebody's dressed. And I think that really comes through in the line choices of neglecting his wife in the hushed reverence of the galaxy. He is a contemplative island while she searches the room for congeniality. Portraits stare out of gilded embossed frames, curious eyes taking in an alien world of these 19th century gazes that wonder, guessing what the artist meant in this tuck of the chin or the mew of the mouth. You know, and I like that because that makes me think of the painting of the Mona Lisa and how for centuries we've debated about, you know, people have debated about what her smile means. And, you know, so I thought this was just such a fascinating write, taking a deep look at the individuals in the photograph and their surroundings. So very well done. And Faisy, your thoughts?
I think it's kind of meta because it's talking about how they're analyzing pictures for all the little details as we are analyzing them. So it's like an art within an art situation where they're looking at portraits and we are looking at their portrait of looking at portraits. So it's kind of a double thing that it's playing with. I like the way each of them are described, both physically and then mentally, how it is imagined that they are feeling. I like just the way that it's described. So it's not just how she looks, but how she's acting, how she's sitting. She's perched on the captain's chair, and her legs are taking strain. So it's not like she's like relaxed into it. She's trying to sit proper. She has her legs out in a way that she has to actually support herself because of she's perched to be looking the way she wants to, I think. And then the part that I like is that he is a contemplative island while she searches the room for congeniality. He's an inner mind kind of enjoying the art and thinking about each piece, whereas she does seem like she's more looking around the room like, who can I talk to about this art? Because people have different responses to things. Sometimes you want to just absorb it yourself, and sometimes you want to be able to talk about things. This really reminds me of when I lived in Ottawa. I had this best friend, and we had a year pass to the National Art Gallery. So we would go all the time, and we would just hang out there on our lunch breaks because it was halfway between our works. And once we'd already looked at all the art ourselves, which we did, then we would people watch and see how other people looked at the art and how different people responded differently to the various paintings that we had already analyzed ourselves. And that was really fun. So I feel like the first time around, we were the man, and then the second time around, we were the woman who's watching everyone else respond. In the poem, I really like that it gave them their distinct personalities. And then the way that it talks about how we're questioning the slant of the eye and how the expressions might mean something is fun because we are looking for that within this picture as the poems are being written. So really cool.
That is cool. I like that you shared the thought. And I have to agree with you that it's, you know, like art within art, the idea of them observing people or art while we're observing them. And, yeah, that is really cool. I've been to art museums before, though. Now the small town I live in, we have little museums, but not like really art museums. Like our one museum, two museums we have is we have the Canoe Museum and we have the Railroad Museum because they fit with this area, but which are still fascinating. But yeah, there's something about going to an art museum and observing, as you were saying, the both the people and the art itself. So very cool. And up next we have Joining the Dots by Big E2. And it goes like this. There's a plumber in the orchestra. You will hear him roar, pumping out the tenor parts of a complex score. He's often left forgotten, but rarely sits alone. He blows the lusty harmony of first trombone. The trumpets give him energy and plays the vocal strains, accompanied by violins taking the reins. Stern actions composers ever strive when writing out a masterpiece to make their music live. Music, when it's written, is given in a mode of lines and dots and dashes, a musical Morse code, with every small contributor filling their spots as the managing conductor joins up all the dots. Until the concert's over, like my simple rhyme, it is frozen in a picture and frozen in time. End poem. And what an absolutely wonderful rhyming poem by Big E2. And your thoughts, Faisie?
I thought this had a nice lyrical quality to it. The rhymes are really nicely done. And I like the way that it talks about the way the music's written. Musical Morse code is great. The dots and dashes, telling the story through the instrumental music, and the conductor joins up all the dots. It's the connect the dot picture where it becomes something that you may not have seen at first glance, and the conductor helps all of the musicians can connect their music to tell the story. And I think that's a great way of putting it. It creates a frozen thing in time. And on the one hand, the picture does that, but also the music itself, if recorded, creates a moment in time that is captured for the future as well. Interesting that he's the plumber in the orchestra. And I'm curious if that has something to do with if they're saying like he has good pipes, because pipes is also used in terms of like the air, the lungs, that he's able to have his voice a certain way, and also to be able to blow in that horn. The pipes are a reference there, and so when it says plumber, I don't think it means plumber literally, but he's the one who has the pipes. It's just playing on that saying. I could be wrong, but that's kind of how I took that, and I thought that was creative.
Yeah, you know, I thought, you know, I was thinking about that too, and I think you've got a good point there. I was also thinking, and I haven't found anything to it yet, but, you know, I almost wonder if it has to do with, you know how, like, with, I believe mostly with trombones, there's actually that suction, you know, that device that fits over the mouth, and people move it to make different notes. Like, you'll see that in, like, the brass bands. And I was wondering if maybe it was a reference to that, but I don't really know enough about, you know, orchestra music to know for sure. But it was definitely, you know, obviously, like you were saying, not about a literal plumber, but rather a reference that has something to do with the music and the musician itself. I really like the rhyme and flow in this, the lyrical quality of it is beautifully written. I like how this speaks on the connection between the conductor and each musical instrument, each musician themselves, and putting it together to create a full picture. I really did like this all the way through, but especially music when it's written is given in a mode of lines and dots and dashes, a musical Morse code, with every small contributor filling their spots as the managing conductor joins up all the dots. So just a wonderful write on the connection of music, and very well done. All right.
I looked up, I just clicked on Big E2's profile because I really enjoyed that poem. The profile description, I was born at a very early age.
He does have a great sense of humor. Well, as you read further, you'll see that he says, they had me circumcised and this was so traumatic, I couldn't walk for more than a year.
Yeah, he
does have a great sense of humor, that's for sure. Oh my goodness. All right, let's see what we have next. All right. We have A Warm Autumn Day by Sam Sampson. And Faisy, go ahead and give that a read, please.
A Warm Autumn Day by Sam Sampson. A warm autumn day, grandfather finally laid to rest. Our ancestral plot near full. No more time for tears as we gather to say goodbye. Open air family tradition of a meal at the wake. We even have a family funeral dish. Long grain rice and pork, 2 cans of Campbell's cream of mushroom soup, 1 pile of mushrooms from Sendik's, grandfather's favorite grocery store. Sometimes we added a can of corn. Now we share this dish at his passing, sharing stories of his life while facing our own mortality. End poem.
Great read there, Faisy. And a wonderful write by Sam Sampson. I was really glad to see he was inspired. In fact, he messaged me to let me know that he really enjoyed the contest and that he actually minored in photography in college and happened to study this particular photographer. He also made a recommendation to me of another photographer, which I have saved. So, you know, I hopefully will be getting that contest up, and I appreciate any recommendations that people make if they have any thoughts about any of the shows I host or co-host. You know, I really like how he puts the humanity into this picture, which is something I think the photographer Eve Arnold did herself. You know, not only in the fact that she photographed people, but she photographed them in moments where she didn't have them looking at the camera. You know, she just simply had them being themselves. And I really related to we even have a family funeral dish, long grain rice and pork, 2 cans of Campbell's cream of mushroom soup. You know, granted, I don't have a specific funeral dish, but it does seem like, particularly here in the Midwest, when there's any sort of gathering, a wedding, a funeral, you know, you're going to have a potluck and there's going to be cream of mushroom or cream of whatever you can find in the cupboard soup involved. I really like these closing lines. Now we share this dish at his passing, sharing stories of his life while facing our own mortality. And that is so true because, you know, when we're at a funeral or a wake, we are celebrating that person's life. And yet, truly, it is a reminder that, you know, life is fragile and we all have limited time here on this earth. So excellent write and very well done. And Faisy, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think that you said it all. I really enjoyed the details of what's what's in the food. And I could totally see Campbell's cream of mushroom soup being in something like this. And it's not just corn, it's a can of corn. Something specifically from the store that the grandfather liked. In a way, when it's talking about we've done this so much, we have a funeral dish, that's actually really sad because it means they've had a lot of loss. You know, there's been a lot of funerals that they were at together to have this tradition. So it feels like there's been a lot of loss in that family. Now, mind you, these are probably older people, but it could just be.
It still
it feels like a lot of loss. And the idea that the ancestral plot is nearly full being put in there, I think, is also significant in that a lot of people have died, and they're running out of space, and maybe it feels like you're running out of family. So I thought that particular line could mean a lot, and it's the sad of what is already there, and also the fear of where will I be if this is already full, and you're at the end facing your own mortality. And I think that's a common thing when someone dies. Yes, we are focused on their loss, but also it makes you think about loss in general. You may be afraid for yourself. You may be afraid for everyone else in your life. All of a sudden, it seems like death is a real possibility. It feels real in a way that it was abstract before, and it hits you. I like that it wasn't just this specific funeral. It was the fact that it's become part of their life. That's the time that you get together with your family, is when there is a loss. And, I see that in real life. You know, I see people at weddings and funerals and when babies are born. Those are the times when people travel to see each other. So many of my family photos, like my big extended family photos, are at funerals. It's like, smile for the picture that you've only seen each other once in 5 years at the funeral. It's a bit odd. So the fact that this poem captures one of those moments of this is when we're gathered. I think that it was fantastic. I really enjoyed this.
It really, yeah, absolutely. And I like that you pointed out the sadness within the dish being used over and over again, and the burial plot, family burial plot, being almost full. Because it is a representation of a lot of loss that has happened. The idea of one generation being almost gone and the next one pondering, their time will be shortly coming. So really great comment. All right. Up next we have Very Good at Faking by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. I should know those two scowling men looking down on me in frames hanging in judgment above the chalkboard. I'm not very good in history. Were they presidents of the United States? No matter, because I feel pretty anxious either way. Standing here in my Sunday shoes, teacher demands I solve this arithmetic problem on display. I'm not very good in math. Glad my back is to the other students. That way they can't see when I pull out my cheat sheet. Thanks, friend in crime, Susie. Ah, jeepers, I can't read her writing. I'm not very good at spelling. Head bowed, decision made. Oh, Miss Rouse, I need the outhouse. My tummy is badly aching, and I may need to barf. She excuses me. Seems I am very good at faking. End poem. I like the humor in this one. Very cool. And Faisie, your thoughts?
I like the humor too. I like that she said it, I think, in the past. Like the way that well, that it has an outhouse. And the way that the little girl speaks, like, oh, jeepers, like, I consider that kind of a retro way of speaking. So I think that it's set in the past, and that makes sense based on the image. I like that the child is admitting the not good at math, the not good at spelling, and the not knowing history. It's like all they're all connected. And you can see all of this just in this one image. I think that Julie picked up on so much within the small image of knowing that there's people at the top who would be, you know, giving pressure. Those are who she's supposed to admire, but she doesn't because she doesn't know who they are. The math on the board, you can tell there's been a lot of erasing, and she's very nervous trying to solve this. I think she brings that to life. I like that she pointed out standing in my Sunday shoes. You know, these are her best shoes, her fanciest ones. She's supposed to be presentable right now. This is a moment where she could shine, but she knows she's not going to, because it's not her area of expertise. And then I like that she can't read Susie's writing and that panic. And then to go into the detail when she needs the outhouse, because she might bark, like, just say you need to go to the outhouse. You don't necessarily have to, like, go into too much detail. But seems I am very good at faking. I like that the I am is capitalized, because it's like, this is the one thing I can do. I can get out of it. This is cute.
Oh, it is. I like this. And it does have a sense of humor. So I think she uses humor to also touch on a serious subject. And, you know, the nervousness, the anxiety-inducing moment where you have to stand in front of the class and go up to the chalkboard. Of course, I don't really think that happens anymore. I think we pretty much have, you know, any, like, different electronic devices, which is beneficial and nice in some ways. But, yeah, definitely going up to the chalkboard was an anxiety-inducing moment. And I love the first-person narrative and the look at this girl's thoughts, and, you know, just how she's trying to figure out how to get out of this situation. So clever, right, and very well done. All right. So I'm going to put up the next poem, Faisy, and I'm going to ask you to read it, and I'm also going to ask you to go straight into commenting, because I just need an extra minute or two, and I'll be right back. And that poem is Cleaning Up Their Mess Again by Time Teller.
Cleaning Up Their Mess Again by Time Teller. It never seems to end, cleaning up the mess of them. They seem to think it's done with simplicity, but we know it's guile and synchronicity. A woman's work is never done. And how true, Athena, when it's someone's son. The young boy who's just so coy still plays and breaks his toys. Then he grows to be that cocksure bull, full of bravado and, well, you know, just plain full. Here I stand before you, broom instead of spear and sword, a thick-skinned old-timer with shoulders unwontedly broad, a gathering of moments harvested from our own sown fields, wisdom of witness years I carry, much like your shield. And when the boys come back from war, we are there waiting to sweep and clean their wounds for sure. We are there waiting to mend their broken bridges, to help them find the light, the journey to shore from their darkest, cruelest nights. We are there to nourish and comfort, to hold them if they might decide to get up and go again, to mess it all up with yet another refrain. And do they listen to what we say? Advice from these old birds? To wit, to woo. No, they won't. And it's us that pays. On Athena, we try so hard. Oh, Athena, we try so hard to look after our men. Always here with your spear, I enjoy our little chats. I wonder, do you do Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or Snapchat, perhaps? There, the sweeping all is done. I see you tomorrow with the gossip of Franco. I think he's all but done. End poem. I really like that she's talking to Athena, who I believe is referencing the Greek goddess Athena, who is amazing, and that's partly why it's connecting to the spear and the sword, but also the wisdom, because Athena is known for all of the above, and just that frustration of having to clean up after the men in her life, and that idea of a woman's work never being done, because you don't get to go home from it if she's, if you know, she's a stay-at-home wife or mother. She is doing things all the time, and there's no like punching out of doing the cleaning and cooking and all of that. It's all the time. You can't shut it off, and she's frustrated with it. You can feel the anger at the mother-in-law too, because someone's son was a young boy who grew up and still breaks his toy. So her husband or partner or whoever was clearly not taught to mind him, his manners and not break things and to not be so egotistical. He wasn't given that guidance as a child, it would seem. And maybe it's her partner, maybe it's someone who she works for as a maid, but I kind of think it's a partner. And it's that idea that women's traditional roles of comforting and waiting and healing can be you know, emotionally damaging, having to always be the caregivers. I do think this has changed a lot in our time, but historically this rings true, and yeah, I think she captured that. The frustration of it, and then she really modernizes it with asking about like Instagram and Snapchat, all that, wanting to connect to Athena in new ways, to find the goddess's advice, to find spirituality, to find maybe kinship in other women in new formats, so she can, you know, persevere through this frustration with her man or with men in general.
Great observation there, Faisy. And yeah, I have to agree. And I think it's with men in general. That would be what I would say. It feels like it speaks on frustration in general. And I do see the way that Time Teller took their inspiration. You know, because a lot of this, the photography mainly focuses on the time period of the 30s, 40s, and 50s. So he does bring us back to a time when there was, you know, a separation between men's work and women's work. And that has changed, you know, and thankfully there's choices out there, and definitely nothing wrong with any choice. You know, you want to be a working mom, a working woman, that's great. It's also absolutely great to be a stay-at-home mom, you know, because you're, you know, someone who takes care of their house. Unfortunately, as many of us know, housework is something that only gets noticed when you don't do it. You know, if you keep things clean, they usually don't notice. It's when all of a sudden there's a mess. I really like, here I stand before you, broom instead of spear and sword, a thick-skinned old-timer, shoulders unwantingly broad, a gathering of moments harvested from our own sown fields, wisdom of witnessed years I carry, much like your shield. And the idea of, you know, all the wisdom that's gathered throughout life and from the observations made. I also like how I think, especially with the references to war, and, you know, we are there where it says, we are, oh, I got to find this. And when the boys come back from war, we are there waiting to sweep and clean their wounds for sure. We are there waiting to mend their broken bridges, to help them find the light, the journey to a shore from the darkest, cruelest night. So it's not just about, you know, keeping the house clean and in order. It's all of a sudden about keeping humanity in order and helping to people to understand that war isn't the answer. War does happen, helping them to find that peace that they need. I also thought that this kind of reminded me of Shakespeare, especially with the lines, even though it wasn't Shakespearean language, but especially with the lines, and do they listen to what we say? Advice from these old birds, to wit, to woo? No, they won't, and it's us that pays. There was a kind of a humor to this in the word choicing that made me think of a Shakespeare play. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I don't want to try to shove another one in. Instead, I'd like to take time to, you know, I'll have a few carryovers. I want to take time to promote some upcoming shows. So, Faizy, if there's any contests that you or Daniel DeShino have running for upcoming shows, did you want to mention those?
Yes. So I have one open right now that is quotes from Arthur Miller, the playwright. And there are several quotes there to go off of for Double Helix. That will be not the next show, but the show after that, because our next show we are doing a collaboration with a piano player, and we've already got our entries for that one. She's going to call in and comment with us, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Those are both going to be great shows. Yeah, I really like Arthur Miller, so great choice there. Well, and tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, is Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. And, of course, keep an eye out on all the poetry contests and topic boards put up by our late-night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And some of the contests you want to check out for upcoming shows are Once Upon a Time by Duke of STP, Dex Bailey, Ritualistic Human Sacrifice, by Intimidus Rex. We have Rhythm and Rhyme, Celebration of Tony Bennett, and by myself for the next After Midnight show, we have by Oscar Wilde. Thank you very much, Faizy, for calling in to co-host with me. I really appreciate you. Thank you, Randy, for calling in. Thank you to Mamya for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And have a good night, everyone.